What really gets my dick hard is.
Welcome back to Metal Up Your Podcast Radio. Today is an all Metallica hour. We're going to be listening to some Metallica songs. I'm going to be reading some questions from social media. All right, let's get this shit started. Right, it's electric. You know, not that the boys are asking me or anything, but that song would definitely get my vote. to go into the Kill 'Em All / cover slot on the current North American Arena Tour. Just me. My only opinion on that right there. If you're joining us for the first time, you may be wondering what the hell's going on. Yes, this is Metal Up Your Podcast. Yes, it is two hosts, usually, my co-host Ethan and I, talking about Metallica. And I'm on tour in Oklahoma City. Ethan had some stuff going on at home. We just couldn't make it work this week. So we always want to make sure that we're able to pump out some content, and we figure that Metal Up Your Podcast Radio is a good opportunity to play some of our favorite songs, talk about music, answer some fan emails and fan questions, and that way you still get your little Metallica nugget, your Metallica Monday nugget that we try to provide for you. So we'll dip into that. Like, I put it out on Instagram if anyone had any questions. There's several here. May not be able to read all these today because there's a bunch on Twitter as well. But Alex VD says, Clint, you and I both came online during the Reload album cycle. Which isn't technically true. I came online during the Black album, but I'm a Reload cat, which is, I think he knows that's what he's saying. Alex VD says, all the talk about the Injustice for All box set got me thinking, if you were tasked with choosing the content of the Reload box, what would you want to see included? And then our friend Gene Froman added a further question, want to take it a step further. Would you make the Load Era discs separate box sets or combine them? Anytime I get asked about what I want to see in box sets, I always feel kind of like a bad fan because my first thought is like, oh, well, whatever they want to put in it, it's fine. Like, I try, you know, the ones that we've gotten have been so good. I've heard the demos from both records, which, by the way, because I'm a selfish motherfucker, I would definitely do it in two different box sets because, I want everything they got, and I would rather, I'd rather have two different box sets that I paid for and get more content than save a little bit of dough and not get that extra 56th take of Fixer. I've heard the demos. They're pretty fun to listen to once. You know, there's not too much interesting to me about that. Of course, the holy grail of anything like this, which, you know, obviously we've seen that they don't have, is unreleased material. Oh, here's some throwaway songs from the Triload album that never came out. I would love to hear 5 to 10 of those songs, but Metallica's not really a band that has a lot of leftovers. Otherwise, we would have seen all that stuff. So it's hard to say, man. We're definitely getting to the point where remastering or remixing or repackaging gets a little silly. But I, of course, love that era so much. It'll be, I think, a good tone setter to see what they do with the Black album. I think we'll be able to, whatever they pull out for Black album, will be reasonable to assume they might have similar stuff for Load and Reload. Cody RH says, if you listen to Jason's recorded audition of the band on YouTube, he gives it his all. Pretty amazing. I have heard it. I agree. As we all know, he was the first one there, the last to audition. When the boys asked him what song he wanted to do, he said any of them. He did his homework. He poured his heart and soul into it, which would, of course, go on to be his calling card for his entire 14-year tenure in the band. Master of Puns says, have you guys ever heard those two new songs Metallica released in 2006? I think he's talking about maybe Vulturous and whatever the one was called, the new Metallica song. I have heard them. Nothing to write home about as far as I'm concerned, but I haven't honestly spent a lot of time with it either. Loves Pugs Not Drugs says, if you were able to sit down and chat with any musician, late or alive, who would you choose? Alive, I mean, this is going to be so boring to some of you. Alive, probably Paul McCartney. Dead, probably John Lennon. I understand how cliche that sounds. Believe me, I do. But that is the answer. D Burgo 2, any tips or suggestions for someone looking to get into vinyl? I'm trying to how to decide which turntable to get, for example. Thanks. Okay, so those of you who know that I am a vinyl nerd, but not in the way of, like, I wouldn't be able to recommend an array of turntables, or I'm not real hung up on rare pressings or first pressings or 180 gram versus whatever. I'm not super precious about it. I love the tactile experience of playing records at home. I like my daughter playing with my vinyl collection. I like how it slows you down, makes you pay attention to what you're doing, engage in the art. So that's kind of really more where my heart lies with the vinyl train and the hunt for my favorite stuff out in the wild, supporting music stores. That's all part of it for me. So All I can really tell you is the turntable I have, which is badass. It's the Orbit U-Turn. It's a couple hundred bucks. It seems to make sense for those of you who are, you know, don't want to spend $1 million and who also don't want to get the cheapest piece of crap out there, because that it does matter. You want to get some good middle of the road gear if you're just a middle of the road person like me. So, read a few more here. Kyle Serafini, how do you go about writing lyrics for a song? I remember you touched on it on another Metal Up Your Podcast radio episode. I always struggle to narrow down the tone of the song through the lyrics. I don't know, man. Sometimes you have an idea of what you want to say. That's obviously easier when you can, at the top of the page, write your mission statement. Sometimes you don't have that, and sometimes you engineer it from the bottom up. Sometimes it's just something that feels good to sing. It may not even make sense, and then you sort of morph that into something that makes sense. One of the things I do a lot when I co-write at home in my studio is, if I have an artist in the room, if we start getting on something musically that we like, I just tell them to start singing what we call dummy lyrics. We're literally just making up, you know, syllables, and you're just sort of getting the phrasing right, but the lyrics are complete. They can be gibberish, or they can just be strings of words that don't make sense together. And what I find is that there's a lot of really good sauce in dummy lyrics, whether it's a turn of phrase or the way something is couched, or maybe it's a sentence you might not otherwise have thought to say. Maybe it's a little left of center. So the secret to really writing anything, whether it's a song or a novel or a screenplay, is that you just have to get up and write every day. Even if it's shit, even if it's not good, you have to just get up and do the work. And then, like anything else, you develop a muscle for it. It gets better, stronger. You start to write more from your heart. You start to, you don't second guess yourself as much. And, you know, second guessing and self-consciousness are kind of the enemies of art, generally speaking. So, speaking of art, let's dip back in and hear another song from the boys. All right, I'll see you guys in a minute. We'll be right back. Oh man, while I was sitting there listening to that with you guys, I was wondering why I played that song in the first place. Not only do I not know why I played that song, I don't even know where my butt is. Okay. That enough's enough part too at the end. Wow. Enough's enough. what an interesting time. You know, like doing the podcast and meeting folks and traveling and, you know, that's the single thing we get asked about the most. It's such an interesting topic. And it's just almost worth the whole thing to think that 15 years later, it's just still such a mystifying time in the life of the greatest heavy metal band that ever roamed the goddamn earth. Of course, I'm talking about Metallica. You thought I was going to try to make a joke there. I know it. All right, let's dip back in on some Instagram questions. Metallicat. Now, that's Metallicat with a K. All right. For you out there keeping score. Metallicat with a K says, ever thought of doing a revisited episode on Some Kind of Monster? The band's commentary is the best part of the DVD. Kirk's comparison of Phil Tao to Jim Jones is pure gold, or should I say canary yellow? Yeah, we're going to do that third disc at some point. It's going to happen. I don't know when, but we will make it happen. Lou Fighter 83 says, I know Woodstock 99 gets a bad rap because of the looting and riots, but Metallica's set was great. Would you guys ever do an episode on that performance? Absolutely. We've got one in the works. Our friend Gene Froman, who was at the show, is going to come on and tell us the whole muddy, stinky experience of it. And there is no doubt whatsoever that that performance, especially of Bleeding Me, you know, top 10 Metallica performances for sure. I loved the dudes, you know, 97 and 99, those live, the shows, the videos. So much confidence, so much swagger. It's one of my favorite little eras, little couplets of years that I like, honey, when I hear them. Reminds me of time gone by. I'm morphing into Tom Quay. Okay. Next question. Jeremy C017 says, do you think there's a different sound that records... Oh, okay, I see. Do you think there's a different sound that records recorded on tape have compared to digitally recorded records? Well, I think so. I think I can hear a difference. It's not enough to replenish your entire record collection. Like, it's not enough to join a cult over. But the difference is there, and if you'd like to hear, if you really care about that experience and you want to listen on some headphones and listen to actual physical media, I mean, there's all sorts of other spiritual reasons so that you should listen to that stuff, but I do believe it actually does sound better. Now, there's a debate about it. There's no consensus. I would probably fail a blind experiment. But you can generally hear things sound warmer and more real. The pop and hiss kind of add a character to the music experience. And in some cases, when it's done really well, you can hear like the mobile fidelity people that put out these crazy reissues, the attention to detail. You can hear stuff in records that you never heard before. I think that's valuable. Now, are we ever going to hear things we've never heard before in my world? Before today, I would have said no. But as I was listening to it with you guys, I did hear a lot of really interesting James mouth noises that I've never heard before in that song. I think at one point he even does like a chuk, ah, which I thought died a long death a long time ago in the 80s somewhere. Chuk, ah. Let's dip back in with the boys. What do we got next? Oh, you know what? In honor of the boys bringing this song out after 7 or 8 years of Dave Matthews Band's what we call it when they play a song they haven't played anywhere. We call that them liberating a song, as if the song is in the captivity of the shelf life. So if you were speaking Dave Matthews lingo, which I know you're all dying to do, by the way, we would have said that No Leaf Clover got liberated on this tour. I believe it was in Lincoln, maybe. Oh, I'm going to get that wrong. Go listen to our Metal Tales from the Road series to see where they got that right. In honor of the song being played again, I know it's a fan favorite. It's definitely one of mine. Let's dip in on some No Leaf Clover.
just a freight train coming away. Then it comes to me and the soothing light at the end of your tunnel. It's just a freight train coming away.
You know, we've talked about, like, wanting a studio version of that song. I'm not sure I want it. How could you beat it? How could you beat that? And let's also not kid ourselves. There was probably some overdubbing going on there. A little bit of cleaning up-ishness. I do know that when he does that vocal, you know, the first time he does the chorus, does it a couple times when it gets real quiet and his voice sounds very, like, lo-fi. You know, it's obviously had some EQ scoopage. That's definitely post-production stuff. But hey, listen. That song's fucking kick-ass either way. Oh. You know what? How about instead of hearing me talk more, why don't we listen to another tune? Yeah, I hear you. I hear you out there. Play another tune, motherfucker. Stop talking about the Dave Matthews Band.
Hey, this is Ethan and Clint from Metal Up Your Podcast, and we want to talk to you about something we love called Patreon.
That's right. Patreon is a way for fans of the show to give back to the show, to donate money that helps us in quality and content. And not only that, but we've actually come up with all sorts of fun incentives to give back to you for supporting the show.
Exactly. For instance, if you donate $5 or more, you get access to Cover Our World Blackened, which is the official Metal Up Your Podcast Metallica cover EP.
That's right, and that's the only way to get it. In addition to the EP, we also give you priority email access, meaning we'll read your email first on the show. We give you early access to Patreon-exclusive merchandise, Patreon-exclusive giveaways, and any other side projects Ethan and I might be involved in.
There's all sorts of things you can look at on there and you can donate to. Go check it out, patreon.com/metalupyourpodcast. How do you spell that, Clint?
patreon.com/metalupyourpodcast. And if you really think about it, $5 a month for an entire year, that's really just like a cup of coffee a month. So go check it out. Thanks, everyone. Peace.
Adios.
Well, you heard it there, folks. That's our Patreon page. If you think the show has value and you want to support it, you can go over there and figure out what makes the most sense for you. We did get some new patrons that I wanted to give a shout out to. At the very minimum, we like to just say thank you because the work going over there at the Patreon level is, at this point, just so crucial and essential to making the show make sense for Ethan and I. So I wanted to say thank you to Daniel Perry, Michael Fell, Michael Salazar, Oscari Imonen, and Eric Christensen. Thank you so much, guys. We really appreciate that. I mentioned in that commercial you just heard that we have this EP. It's called Cover Our Black and Volume 1. Where Ethan and I covered a bunch of Metallica songs, The Unnamed Feeling, Frayed Ends of Sanity, Sanitarium, Low Man's Lyric, Fixer, Unforgiven 3. And we're cranking away on Volume 2. Now, becoming a patron is the only way to get the new EPs. Once we get EP 2 out, we're going to make Volume 1 available. But for now, this is the only way you can get it. So, you know, you get to support the show that you presumably enjoy and derive value from. And we also get to just give you a little bonus for saying thank you. And I just got a rough mix of one of my songs from Volume 2. I wasn't even planning on doing this, but I just got the mix. And I'm going to let you guys hear my version of Whiskey in the Jar. Again, this is exclusive to patrons. So may it swiftly urge you over to the Patreon. Here's Whiskey in the Jar, reimagined.
One, two. As I was going over the cork and carry mountains, I saw Captain Pharaoh and his money he was counting. I first produced my pistol and then produced my rapier. I said, stand and deliver, or the devil he may take you. I took all of his money, and it was a pretty penny. I took all of his money, and I brought it home to Molly. She swore that she loved me, no, never would she leave me. But the devil took that woman, you know she tricked me easy. Shouting down my door, my dog, waiting for my daddy. chamber and taking Molly with me. I never knew the danger. 4 by 6, maybe 7. It was Captain Phil. I jumped up, fired my pistols, and I shot him with both barrels. Wish I ain't never do it on the die.
There you have it, folks. First listen to Whiskey in the Jar from the forthcoming Volume 2 of Cover Our World Blackened. Got to give shout-out to my friend Mark for playing the strings on that. There's actually a whole snafu with that session. He came over to lay down some strings in my studio. He's the fiddle player in the band that I travel with. He played on Low Man's Lyric. I may have just said that, actually. If I just said that, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. He came over to do Whiskey, and I mean, and the only times this ever happened in my life, I could not find the session. I had accidentally either renamed it and deleted it. So, like, everything you hear, the acoustics, the piano, the bass, the shaker, those snaps, that was all stemmed out in this session. And I just made a rough mix just for me to listen to, like, you know, when I'm at the gym or running, so I can just make sure it sounds good. And that ended up being the only thing we had left. Otherwise, the whole thing doesn't exist anymore. And I really liked the way the vocal turned out, and so I just had Mark track over my rough mix, and then we sent it to our friend Nathan Thomas, who worked a little bit of studio magic, mixing magic, and made that sound the way it does. I'm pretty happy with it. It's real rough and tumble, but I think that serves the song well, and good God, anyway, no one wants to hear me talk even more about that. So if you dig that, head on over to Patreon, consider giving it that level. At the very least, you get the EP, you get a shout-out. You have your mother come over and make you a sandwich. Maybe you only eat half of it, but you totally ate the whole thing because it was delicious. We'll be right back. That's either A Wolf from A Wolf and Man, or it's Arsenio Hall. We still don't know to this day. We have people checking on it. Speaking of checking on things, let's check in with a little bit of emails. If you want to email the show, by the way, you can email us at metalupyourpodcastshow@gmail.com. We read a few per episode, just to dip in. Our friend Alex Finney writes, "Wanted to drop a line to tell you dudes how much I enjoyed the recent Death Magnetic episode. Nothing but smiles on this end while you two talked along and increased my appreciation of the record. This week I listened to Death Magnetic anew, and that alone is worth the price of admission." Well, thank you for saying that, Alex. We got a bunch of good feedback on the Death Magnetic, 10 years of Death Magnetic episode, where we decided to just listen to the record together, and in some spots we crank it and listen along, and some spots we duck the volume and talk about a riff or a solo or production or what we had for lunch, what have you. Alex goes on to say, "Now for an important question. Seeing all these youngsters at the shows got me wondering if a Metallica cartoon has ever been floated to the guys. I do not endorse this idea, but I think it would be funny for a conversation. Would it be like the Beatles cartoon, perhaps a superhero team or mystery-solving group of anthropomorphic animal versions of the guys, the Metallicats? Thanks again for all you guys do, Alex." Yeah, I don't know. I mean, you know, the cartoonification of Kiss back in the 70s. Those of you who remember or who are interested in Kiss history, what we refer to as Kistery, by the way. The cartoonification of the band was a big bummer for many fans. They did this kind of kids movie, Kiss Meets the Phantom of the Park. They were getting involved in comic books, and, you know, the Beatles pulled it off, but the Beatles are the greatest band ever. So, it's hard to do, you know? Like, I think them being guests on, like, Metalocalypse or something would be cool, but, you know, I don't know if I want to see a cartoon crab walk. Although, having said that out loud just now, maybe I do want to see that. It's an interesting question. Thanks, Alex. Tim Brown writes, "Hey, Clint and Ethan. Writing from actual New Jersey, New Jersey. Found your show about a month ago as I started a new job with a longer commute. Pretty much caught up now and actually enjoy my ride to work each day. Great to hear two people talk about my favorite band in such detail and unearth new knowledge that I can spread to others, willingly or otherwise." He says, "A question for you two, obviously, or possibly an episode idea. If they were to make a full-fledged Metallica career tribute slash retrospective with other famous artists, a la the Maiden Heaven tribute or Dio tribute albums, which artist would you like to see cover their songs?" He says a couple of his picks would be Slash and Miles Kennedy doing Creeping Death, Mastodon All Nightmare Long, Foo Fighters Hero of the Day, Alice in Chains The Thing That Should Not Be, Brad Paisley for Unforgiven 2, Pearl Jam for the Outlaw Tour, and oh my god, I would kill to see that. Queens of the Stone Age doing Fixer, Operator Dire Z, Volbeat Four Horsemen, Black Label Society, Master of Puppets. He says, and the crowning jewel would be Megadeth doing Halo on Fire. Just imagine Dave finishing the song over and over with, "Hello, darkness, say goodbye." A deluxe edition would, of course, include the Hulkster with a new rendition of Hulkier Than Thou. Keep up the great work, guys. Tim Brown. Well, thanks, Tim. Your suggestion's very cool. I can't argue with any of that. I'm not particularly interested in these kinds of collections, but if someone puts them out, I usually will buy them and check them out. I can't imagine who should cover what. I'll just go with your suggestions because they're so good. Let's read one more. We got a new patron from Oscari Imonen. Says, "Hey dudes, finally decided to become a patron of the show. The effort you guys put into making the podcast is outstanding, and I feel that the least that I can do in return is donate a couple of dollars a month to help you guys keep making the show as awesome as it is." I so very much appreciate him saying that. You know, we have enough listeners now to where even if it is just a couple of bucks a month, it really goes a long way. I can't do the math for you, but I do know that. He says, also, the Covers EP was one of the reasons for me becoming a patron, as it's just absolutely amazing. Can't wait for Volume 2. Nice. I hope you liked Whiskey in the Jar there. Keep up the awesome work from your new Patreon from Finland, Oscari Imonen. P.S. Ethan was correct on the pronunciation of my name, as you guys were thinking about that two episodes ago. Oscari. Sorry, I've been saying it wrong this whole time. Well, we certainly appreciate that. We may dip in on some emails in a minute. Of course, got other questions from the socials. Go follow us on Instagram and, you know, Twitter and Facebook and YouTube and Spungify. Wherever you find all that stuff, including this next song, which just might be the newest classic that the band has ever pinned. I'm talking about Moth in the Flame. We'll be right back. All right, we got an email from our new patron. His name is Michael Salazar. It says, "Hello, Clint and Ethan. My name is Michael, and I just finished listening to all the episodes. Love your podcast. It's really made my days at work fly by. I'm also a new patron. Thank you. I listen to a lot of podcasts, but yours is the first one I've pledged to. I respect and appreciate the musicianship side of your views. I've been playing guitar for 18 years and have a band. Very cool. Metallica is, of course, essential to learn for most guitarists, I believe. Definitely enjoy playing and Justice for All stuff the most, but I have lots of them, as I'm sure you do. For me, one of the most fun songs to play is A Day That Never Comes. I actually don't know how to play that. My favorite will always be Master of Puppets, the first song I ever learned. Although you can't beat the awesomeness of the main riff from King Nothing. That is a badass riff. Let's see here. I really like your Dave and Torben impressions. When I heard Dave Mustaine as Marty McFly, I just about spit out what I was eating, or spit out the bone, if you will, he writes. I want to make sure I give credit to him for that joke, okay? That wasn't me doing a clever, classic Clint aside, okay? I want Michael to get the credit for that. He says, I'd love to hear more Dave as Marty McFly, but maybe Torben can be Doc Emmett Brown. Anyways, really have enjoyed diving into your podcast, going back and listening to old Metallica records. Love all of them and was a huge fan of Load and Reload. Huge Newstead fan as well and was sad to see him go. I remember the first time seeing MTV Icon and seeing Robert play with Metallica. I definitely felt the way Clint did, sort of, who is this guy? Then I remembered I'd seen him with Ozzy. Totally think Rob is an awesome bass player and an awesome dude. I agree. Let's see here. Talks a little bit about Death Magnetic. I live in Northwest Indiana, so if you ever find yourselves coming from Chicago or Indianapolis and need a place to crash and have some food and drinks on me, please let me know. Gonna go listen to your EP now. Last thing I want to say is I agree with you that I did not like... Oh, he's talking about how he didn't like the dot, dot, dot on the Hardwired title. The way it's written kind of makes it sound like William Shatner is saying it. But what do I know? They're only the biggest metal band ever. Later, dudes. Yep, that's a good point, too. That's a good point, too. We've trusted them all this way. Yeah, I think they should have called it Hardwired to Self-Destruct. No dot, dot, dot. And they should have called the song Hardwired. Hardwired to Self-Destruct. Chuck Klosterman, who's this great pop culture writer. By the way, I'm in this hotel room. Like, while I'm talking on this part, I'm just, like, laying back on this couch. This does not feel like I'm doing a podcast right now. But one of my favorite criticisms of Kiss records is Chuck Klosterman, this writer I like a lot. He wrote Sex, Drugs, and Cocoa Puffs, by the way. You guys may have heard of that. I encourage you to go read it. I specifically encourage you metal nerds to go read Fargo Rock City. But he talks about Kiss had a record called Crazy Nights. So the album was called Crazy Nights. The song is called Crazy, Crazy Nights. And in the chorus of the song, he actually says, "These are crazy, crazy, crazy nights." What's the logic there? Well, let's not put logic in most conversations with Kiss. They did just announce, for those of you paying attention to the rock news world, they've announced their 2019 One Last Kiss End of the Road Tour. Now, many of us, of course, remember their first farewell tour in 2000, which they, of course, squared the circle by saying that it was the farewell to the original members tour. So we're going to be getting a farewell tour with Tommy Thayer, and the current drummer's name, Eric Singer, which could also be called the tour nobody asked for. And I say that as a huge Kiss fan. Okay, maybe we'll dip back in with a little bit of Instagram questions. Let's see here. Gabe Unkind says, "Have you ever had someone judge Metallica without them actually knowing anything about the band?" He says, "You know, because their name is Metallica, they think they're a satanic band who yell and scream unintelligibly. Does it annoy you to no end asking for a friend?" I know what you're saying. You've got a friend that bugs you about it, won't give it a shot, assumes a whole bunch of things about it because it's metal. Yeah, I haven't encountered much of that. You know, my wife's pretty obstinate. I think if she would give me a chance, I might be able to get her on board. But she sort of has an idea of Metallica that is, you know, unmovable. And that's just part of it, dude. They're called Metallica. I mean, it's like the Beatles. It's not the best band name in the world, let's face it. Think about this. What are good band names? Like, really think about it. Are there any? Most band names, horrible. The Eagles, terrible. The Beatles, but we're going to... Oh, Paul, we're going to change the E to an A. Like beating on a drum, like the Mercy beat. What, Paul? No, bad. You guys just wrote the best songs in the world. Metallica, same deal. We're going to call it Metallica. Are you? Yeah, but then we're going to write the best songs ever written in a metal band. Okay, well, cool. That's fine. Black Sabbath, dope. Amazing band name. AC/DC, terrible. Pearl Jam, awful. One of the most unoriginal band titles of all fucking time, The Dave Matthews Band. Horrible. Completely terrible. DMB is better than Dave Matthews Band. So think about it. And these are bands I love, by the way. Almost every band I just named, I love. Are there any, when you think about it that way, are there any good band names? Corrosion of Conformity, pretty cool. Also, maybe not that great. The Cure, awesome. Very good. The Smiths, terrible. One of the best bands that ever happened to Birmingham, Alabama, where I'm from. I'm talking Beatle-level quality songwriting. The band was called Wayne. Wayne. One of the most boring names. Let's just face it. Wayne is a boring name. I'm sorry for those of you out there named Wayne. I know my friend Wayne Summers is probably bummed to hear this right now. Look, my name's Clint. It's one of the weirdest, dumbest names ever. So we're in the same tree there. Oh, anyway. People are always going to make assumptions because they're called Metallica. I think anyone who honestly sits down to see what they're about and to absorb their message, I don't think it's possible to walk away from that without at least respecting them. Now, Gabe Unkind asks about people who think they're satanic. I must mention, I was a guest on the only ghost podcast that I know of right now. It's called Podcast Emeritus. And I did an episode today with those boys on the Meliora record, which is my favorite ghost record. It's their third record. And that story is pretty crazy. I'll tell this before we play another Metallica song. So the Brady Trantham and Matt, who do the hosting over there at Podcast Emeritus, are fans of Metal Up Your Podcast and have been real sweet. And apparently our show inspired them to do it. And sort of loosely based, I guess, on the format of the show Ethan and I do. And they reached out to me and said, hey, we'd love to have you talk about Meliora because they've heard me say it was my favorite ghost record or whatever. So I said, hey, yeah. They said, well, the days that are best for us are Sundays. Can you make a Sunday work? And this whole time, of course, we're assuming that I'm going to be either at home in my studio or in a hotel with my remote rig recording this stuff. So I said, Sunday's fine. Actually, this Sunday coming up, I have an off day on the road. I've been out on the road for about 6 or 7 days. So I have an off day. And I said, I'll be in Oklahoma City. I probably said something in the email like, I'll be in some hotel room in Oklahoma City. And Brady wrote back. He was like, dude, we live in Oklahoma City. You're really going to be here that day on a day off. So I was able to get in an Uber and actually go to Matt's place and actually be in a room with those dudes as a guest on their podcast. So that'll be out sometime next week. Be looking for it. Podcast Emeritus. If you haven't heard Ghost, you really do need to go check it out because I think you'll probably like it. And if you do like Ghost, maybe go check out those dudes and get in on the conversation. A lot to talk about with those dudes. Because the music being good is just one part of it. The dude dresses up like an evil pope, and he has a bunch of characters, and the nameless ghouls are his band, and they wear these masks with no mouths, okay? And this is before you take the LSD, okay? Speaking of Satan and Metallica and Ghost and calling your mother, let's dip in on an underappreciated gem. The boys actually jammed on it during the infamous or famous, depending on the angle you look at it, Robin Kirkdoodle. This is a little tune that I've loved since I was a wee lad. I remember hearing it the day it came out, and I've never not loved it since then. It's called Devil's Dance. Now listen, you guys know how I feel about maniacal laughter in songs. It's just one of my favorite things in the world. And yet another thing that endears me to the Devil's Dance. All right, let's read a few questions from Twitter. I've neglected Twitter here a little bit, I believe. Let's see what we got here. Nicholas Garzolini says, I appreciate your opinion of Metallica because you represent the working musician's voice. Thank you. Please keep up the excellent work, gents. Oh, thank you. No question there. Just a nice compliment. Compliments go a long way. Compliment your mother, Carla. Nick McCoviak, friend of the show, says, delete that. Back to the Future, Coming to America, or What About Bob? Dude, don't make me choose between my children, my babies. All right, well, Back to the Future obviously can't go. It just can't go. There are three of them. The entire universe of it is too big. Too big to go. Coming to America, What About Bob? Real tough. But if I gotta let one go, it's gotta be What About Bob. It just, you know, Coming to America, the argument I would make there for it living on is both Eddie Murphy and Arsenio Hall played these other characters in a time where the prosthesis technology and there was no CGI. They just really became these people. The artists that helped them become those guys. I mean, think about it. The dude at the end of Coming to America with the joke about the soup, the big white Jewish guy. He's not big. I don't know why I said big. The big Jewish white guy. That's Eddie Murphy. So for that alone, just the amazing technological feats of that movie. Is that technology? I don't know. Tom over at Alpha Metallica, which, by the way, if you haven't heard that, is our friend Tom Cui over in the UK, has a show in which he goes through every Metallica song in alphabetical order, hence the name, with a different guest. You could even be that guest. His show every week is a different listener with him. Talking about Metallica. Tom says, favorite British films. Man, I do not watch a lot of British films. I don't know if it's because I don't really like the flavor or because I just don't know enough. Tom knows, and some of my friends know, that I am a big movie nerd, big cinephile. The Wicker Man is a movie that comes to mind, great 70s horror film. There was a remake of it with Nicolas Cage, which I recommend watching for completely different reasons. Hard Day's Night, of course, any of the Beatles stuff, Help. Clockwork Orange is a movie I think of when I think of British movies that I like. Also, highly recommend the novel by Anthony Burgess. It's an easier read than you might think. Probably the best movie that I've like sought out that was on a lot of lists was this movie by Michelangelo Antonioni, and it's called Blow Up. And I got hip to that movie because I'm a big De Palma fan, Brian De Palma, who's an American director who came up in a time called the New Hollywood, this kind of golden age of the 70s where there was all these auteur directors who basically had freedom from the studio to make whatever movies they wanted, okay? And we're talking about Godfather 1 and 2. We're talking about Carrie. We're talking about the Star Wars films, okay? It was Coppola doing Godfather, George Lucas doing Star Wars. It was Steven Spielberg making Jaws. A young Spielberg, and De Palma, as far as I'm concerned. And Scorsese was in there also. I mean, Scorsese was doing Mean Streets and Taxi Driver, okay? You're getting a sense of this, right? These were like mainstream, major studio movies, which would these days be, you know, indie passion projects. But De Palma, in my opinion, was making the coolest shit in the 70s. Phantom of the Paradise, Carrie, The Fury, Sisters. Just some really great work. A really prolific dude, too. A really great movie called Obsession. It's kind of hard to stomach, but worth checking out. Now, why am I talking about all of this? Favorite British films. Now, De Palma has a movie called Blowout, starring John Travolta, that if those of you have seen it know it's fucking awesome. It's about someone who overdubs sounds for movies. He has to go out and get the sound of, like, cars going down the road, and he hears a car crash and basically solves this crime. It was, like, a car crash where, like, this politician was in the car. He goes back and listens to the audio he was taking, and you hear a gunshot, because what happened is someone blew out the tire that made it crash into the water. Now, Brian De Palma is sometimes fairly criticized for being too much of a student of cinema. He puts a lot of homages, especially to Hitchcock, in his movies. A lot of people claim that he ripped this movie off Blow Up, in which a British photographer catches a murder on his camera, and through blowing up the camera tries to solve the crime. It's not a stretch there to see that De Palma totally ripped that off, or, if we're being generous, was inspired by it. So that's a movie I'd recommend. Of course, Brazil, Terry Gilliam's Brazil is amazing. Shakespeare in Love won an Oscar. I like that movie. I haven't seen Lawrence of Arabia yet, but that's definitely on a lot of people's list. Four Weddings and a Funeral is great. That may be all I can think of right now. But thoughtful question from Mr. Thomas Quee. And I'll appreciate it, Tom, over there. What else we got? What's your opinion on Paul... this is Bill Voronokos, by the way. What's your opinion on Paul Stanley's current singing voice? Do you think he sounds good? Absolutely not. And it makes me sad. I hate to say it. I wish he sounded great, but he sounded rough. The One Last Kiss into the Road Tour does not sound like a bad idea. Roger Fletcher says, I've always wondered why Kirk wears that tape on his hand when he plays. Do you know why? I've read that it's because he cuts his hand on his strings, and, you know, he's trying to avoid that. Robert Vallejo says, what's the best roadmap to understand Kiss? Unfortunately, what you really need to understand Kiss is a time machine, because there's a certain window of being a kid that it almost has to hit you in, which I know isn't the best compliment for their music, which I do believe they were great songwriters. I would say if you're just trying to jump in now, coming in dry, as they say, I would start with the Unplugged record from 95. The Unplugged record is where you really get to see that they were great players, great songwriters. Plus, you get Ace in there, get Peter in there at the end. It's what kickstarted the whole reunion tour of 96 and 97, which many people consider the second greatest peak of the entire Kiss existence. 76, 77, back in Destroyer of Love, Gun Alive 2, and then, of course, 96, 97 reunion tour, in which they wore their Love Gun outfits and had the Love Gun set. Now, are we going to have a 2017, 2018, 2019 third peak? It's not looking good, homies. Not looking good. But I'd start with that Unplugged record. If you're looking for the 70s shit, I'd say maybe start with Destroyer. If you're looking for 80s, start with Lick It Up. Frankster says, Clint, what's your favorite Beatles album? Trying to get into them, and I like all the hits, but I want to listen to more. Okay, well, it changes all the time, because I've listened to the Beatles quite a bit. And I would say pound for pound, historically, my favorite Beatles record has been Revolver. It's a very dense record. You get three George songs instead of two. You get some great, you get For No One, which is one of my favorite McCartney songs. You get Taxman, which is a great George song with a great Paul guitar solo. I Want to Tell You is probably in my top three favorite George songs. Andrew Bird Can Sing, Dr. Robert. It's just a great record. Now, lately, what I've been digging is the more psychedelic Sgt. Pepper and Magical Mystery Tour era. If you really want to just get a big old dose of Beatles that's not hits, get the White Album. You got four sides. You know, some people have called it basically four Beatles solo records. I'm not sure about all that. I think they still sound like a band, but the good news is, if you like the Beatles and you have all this ahead of you, then just pace yourself and have fun and enjoy it. You're only going to be able to hear this stuff once, or you're only going to be able to hear it for the first time once. So enjoy it. Okay. Let's see. I think that might be it. Or maybe not. I don't know. Let's listen to a song. Good grief. This has been forever. Sorry. Here's Hero of the Day. mama. That's what he says in the S&M version. All right, we've got a few more questions here before I leave you guys with a Metallica track that I don't know what it's going to be yet. I do not know how I'm ending the show. I thought Here or They might have been a good ending, but as you can see, we're still going. So, Aurelien Moreau, who's a patron of the show, writes, what can we expect, in your opinion, what can we expect from Metallica for the coming years? A new album in 1 or 2 years, extensive touring, as the guys are in their 50s, if you ever think of the way Metallica would end their career? It's a great question. I don't think extensive touring is ever going to happen again, I'm sad to say. I do think that I've heard Lars say that they're more eager to get in the studio because of the positive reaction to Hardwired. They've sort of been rejuvenated and inspired. You know, they're probably going to take a year off after... They're probably going to take 2020 off. And maybe they'll start making a record at the end of the fall of 2020, but it's probably going to be 2021, and they like to take their time. It took them almost 2 years to make Hardwired. So my guess, and of course I don't know, I have no special access to information that you guys don't have. My guess is we're going to get another Hardwired quality record. And probably another tour cycle around it. And then, you know, how they want to end it, I don't know. Is it going to be like Rush, where they kind of don't draw a lot of attention to it, and they just split, 40 years, done, gonzo? Are they going to do something similar to the 30th anniversary shows? I mean, time will tell. I mean, we'll all be on that ride together. But I think it's reasonable to hope for another great record like Hardwired, which would make me super stoked. Maybe an EP in between, like maybe a covers EP would be fun. I don't know. It's a good question, though. Okay, we got another one from Bane1775. You've mentioned the time travel concerts you'd like to go back and see. What are the top five for you? And then he says his are Guns at the Ritz, which I believe is like 87, 88. That's Appetite. Metallica, Seattle 89. Beatles at Candlestick Park. Zeppelin 72 at the Forum. Nirvana at Reading Festival. Yeah, those are like real well thought out. I don't know. That gun, of course, seeing Guns with Metallica and Faith No More was, as I've mentioned before, a fantasy episode. I'm going through a big Dave thing right now. So, you know, they had a really talented, charming saxophonist who died in the late aughts. And I've been thinking a lot about going back and, you know, wishing I could. I only saw maybe 8, 9, or 10 shows back in that era. I'd love to go see Dave Matthews around like 1996, when his second record Crash was happening. They won a Grammy for So Much to Say. They hadn't yet made what many consider their masterpiece, Before These Crowded Streets, yet. They were still kind of coming up, but on fire. That seems like an exciting period to me. Here are the bands that I'll take any show in the 70s, okay? So I'm just going to name this band. I'll take any show from the 70s, okay? Randy Newman, The Eagles, Elton John, Fleetwood Mac, Black Sabbath. It's probably, I don't know, 7,500 more, but those are the ones that come to mind. That's fun to think about. All right, our last question before I leave you all, before I bid you adieu, is Aurelien again saying, you've mentioned several times that your first thought when hearing Death Magnetic were, they're back. I've listened to a lot of Death Magnetic and Justice this weekend, and I think Death Magnetic could easily have been just a Justice sequel. You share the same opinion? I mean, yeah, in terms of like the songs are long and progressive and take a lot of left turns and require a lot of stamina, but that's definitely really similar. The songs on Death Magnetic are more personal than Justice. And just contextually, you know, coming from Puppets to Justice is just feels completely different, because it is, than going from Saint Anger to Death Magnetic. I mean, I know that's obvious, but I don't really know how to say it without invoking the obvious there. But in terms of like the length, song length, and the progressive nature of the record, I think those two are more similar than any of the other two. So in that sense, yes, I agree. Thanks to everyone who is listening and who sent questions. Of course, we miss Ethan. We'll see him back on the flip-flop soon. If you're joining for the Patreon, what we're also going to do here shortly is post our Ray Burton interview early for all of you to hear. We've got some cool new shirts in the merch store. You can go follow our socials and find all that stuff. But the logo that we've been using for the Metal Tales from the Road, the dagger coming out of the phone, we're making that into a t-shirt. And you're going to want your t-shirt for the party, the pre-Nashville party, January 23rd, I believe. And to convince all of your friends and remind all of them that you're a badass motherfucker and that you have good taste when it comes to podcast listening. I wanted to give a shout out also to Kevin Van Dam and his wife, Carly Beth. They came to a show the other night. It was nice to sit and chill with them on the bus in Denver and talk about Metallica and music and life. And Kevin's been a good friend of the show, and he loaned us the box sets so that we could do our reviews for you guys. And wanted to give a shout out to him. Shout out to the Podcast Emeritus guys. Shout out to Ethan. Shout out to Tom Kui over across the pond. Who else should we shout out? Should we do some more shout outs? How about all my Metallica podcast brethren? Metallicast, Metallichats, Alphabet Bisnalica, Speak and Destroy. Should we shout anyone else out? Shout out to James Hetfield. Just him. Maybe not the other guys. Just James today. I don't know why. Shout out to James. I think he needs to hear it. We, of course, love and respect all of you and really appreciate you listening and making this labor of love project that we've put together worthwhile, keeping us proud to do this work, to be your ambassadors of the fandom of Metallica, whatever that means. I just made it up. It may not mean anything. And we'll be back next week with a proper episode. Those of you missing our dear friend Ethan Luck will be happy to know that he will be returning. And I guess that's it. Peace and adios.